Hey, everybody, it's Hal Eisner. Thanks for joining us again for another edition of What the Hal. And, you know, sometimes we forget, but so many people in our country put on a uniform and go to war for us. Veterans come back to this country, and it's like all of a sudden a different place. They come back to relationship issues. They come back with PTSD. They come back with all kinds of needs they didn't have before they left for the service. We have agencies here in Southern California and frankly, all over the country to try to help veterans as they come back. And that's what this podcast this week is all about. The first thing I want to do is go around the table, and I'd like, let's start with you, and I'd like you to introduce yourself, say who you are, and tell me if you were in the service, what your level of time in the service was.
Be happy to. My name is Christine Stanley, and I served in the Air Force for 24 years.
Okay. Noe?
My name is Noe Aguirre, and I was in the Marine Corps for a little under 6 years.
Okay. And then let's go over here. Robert?
Sure. My name is Robert Storr, and I'm the Executive Director of U.S. Vets.
All right. Stephanie?
Hi, I'm Stephanie Stone. I'm Chief Deputy Director for L.A. County Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. Did 20 years Navy.
And I'm Jonathan Williams, President and CEO of the Battleship Iowa Museum.
And there are two other people in here that are very important, and that's Molly and her husband Orlando and Breeze. And I want to start with you two, because one of the things that happens when you this program is going to be about Veterans Affairs, but what happens to families and couples when you come out of the service can be devastating to a marriage. And I'd like for you two to explain a little bit. And you can fight with each other over the microphone. but I'd like for the two of you to explain what happened to your relationship and what did Operation, Operation
Healing Forces.
What did Operation Healing Forces, I can't even say it actually, do for you?
Well, basically, I can explain the routine. It's like you do train-ups. To prepare to go to wherever you're going in the world. And you're kind of in an intense environment from the get-go, you know, and you got 12 other, you know, type A personality guys who are trying to get after it. And then you deploy. And then, you know, the op tempo is something, you know, that people, it's unheard of. You know, you got days that you're resting and all that, but then you come back after a 6 month deployment and you come back with that stress.
Now you had 9 tours of duty.
Yes, sir.
And where were those?
Afghanistan, Iraq, Italy, Portugal, Spain, France.
Now you're married during this time, and you're trying to maintain a relationship apart. And each time you came back, what was that like?
It was like, it was tense, and I would say it was more tense for Molly.
Because, tense in what way?
She didn't know who was coming home. You know, it was like...
Were you the Jekyll or the Hyde?
Pretty much. Yeah. That's how it was. So, you know, everything's nice because you're happy to see each other. You know, it's been so long. You know, it's been 6 months, 8 months, a year in some cases. For certain families. And the integration was like, okay, everything's happy until something breaks or something happens and it triggers.
So a glass falls on the kitchen floor, it breaks, what happens?
Yeah, you're highly upset and then you start taking it out on whoever's there.
Is that where the PTSD is kicking in?
Sometimes
maybe it sounds like a gunshot or something like that.
Sometimes like that, and not necessarily like gunshots. You know, we encourage them in special forces. I mean, that's what we're around. But it's more something. It could be somebody being late, getting ready, something not going the right way because you're in a particular set way. You have a schedule. You got to keep that schedule. You got to keep going.
You're militarized.
Exactly.
And so you follow a certain routine. You do it by rote. And then here you come home, and Molly's like, hi, good to see you. And you're like, grumble, grumble, grumble.
No,
Molly, was he grumble, grumble, grumble?
I think like by the third day,
He'd be fine. Everything would be like almost kind of normal. He'd come home and it's kind of like, oh, here we go. We're together again and it's happy-go-lucky. And then, like he said, something goes wrong or it's off. And then he just loses it. I call it Hellboy. Hellboy comes out. He turns all red. And it's never like I've never been fearful or anything like that. It's just he gets so angry to the point where the way it affected me, how he's kind of mentioning, was that it's okay, well, I'm not going to say anything because then he's going to get more mad. So the communication was hard. And I think that was the biggest thing. It was hard for me to, when he was angry or when he wanted to do something that I know was not the right thing or, you know, things like that. It was hard for me to speak my mind, and I'm one that likes to speak my mind, but for fear that he would get angry. So that's something that he's gotten really good about. And going back to your question about OHF, that really opened him up to seek support, to be open to it. And so he went through a very long program, and now he'll still get angry, and he still might turn into Hellboy for a split second, but he now knows, he recognizes it, and he knows how to deal with it better.
Do needles come out of his head?
Yeah, I literally...
No, not that Hellboy, okay.
No, well, you know, that is exactly what I mean.
Is that right? But I don't know that people who haven't been through this sort of a situation understand what post-traumatic stress disorder does. And can you explain what that does?
So what it did with me is you get anxious, you start fidgeting with things, and then you start losing relationships, you start losing interest in things that you used to like, you know, you become numb. Some people indulge in drinking as far as doing drugs, and you become disconnected.
Did you ever have to do that?
No. Yeah. No. I did drink, but like it was to the point where I recognized that and I stopped.
So what did they do for you at Operation Healing Forces?
Basically, you know, with Jeff Hudson, when he came in, he was in charge of our program, and you know, we all sat down and we ate together. And that's the time that we were all just bonding with each other, and we were talking.
Now, when you say all of us, it wasn't just you and Molly.
No.
It was you, Molly, and several other couples in the same situation. Mm-hmm. What did you get from being with the other couples?
I think we can relate that we're all fighting the same fight. You know, somebody didn't probably have a limb or something, but the struggle was still the same. Not all scars are visible. I got shot in my arm, and all the spouses were like, wow, you look great. Like, I mean, you look like you're fit and go, you know, ready to go back to duty. And they didn't mean it in a bad way. Like, oh, look at my, you know, my husband or whatever. But, it was an opportunity to, you know, reference with each other and talk and relate. And I was able to talk to Molly in a certain way. I didn't know I was doing things because, you know, like, I'm in the military. Molly's not. And that's the one thing that I had to separate. And I think that's what would trigger things.
Is he still a nice guy?
He's a big teddy bear. He's total. It's such a big teddy bear. I also call him one of the angriest people in the world. But he's really just a big teddy bear. He's an angry teddy bear, but he's a big teddy bear. He has a big heart, and he's super social. He likes to talk to everybody. But, yeah.
So it sounds to me like, without getting too much into the TMI area, that means too much information. It sounds like there was a lot of love there to begin with. Yes. And so, assuming that, was the love strong enough to deal with the things that were getting in the way?
Yes. And I think you have to be really strong. You have to know the goal is to stay together, and you have to want the same thing. So, yeah. And then I'm also very patient. So
you should see her smile. I wish just had a camera on it, because you should see her smile. I know, and we're going to talk about this going forward, but Operation Healing Forces, they take donations like every other organization, and they're looking for help and even for homes, I think, to be able to have people be housed. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. I believe so, yes. They're amazing. So the thing is with them, if they could get more support, because what they do, what I saw it do for him is that it opened him up. So around his brothers, you know, where he was stationed, of course, he's Mr. Cool Guy. They're all really cool guys. They, you know, they talk about, like, how they got hurt and how cool it was, but they don't talk about the issues that it causes. And with OHF, the bonding experience, they actually talked about the effects of what happened to them and how, and even us as the spouses, we talked about all of that stuff. You know,
so I don't mean well, to, I never I, talked to I don't mean to make else. Light of this, though, yeah. but do you actually talk about how cool it is that you got shot in the arm?
Oh, yeah.
Really? So the guys would talk to each other like that? So do the women do that? My husband got shot in the arm, mine got shot in the elbow, and, you know.
Molly makes a really good mockery of me when I'm talking to the guys. So go ahead and tell them how I talk.
No.
Oh, I want to know. I want to hear. Yeah. Go ahead. Come on.
Oh, it's like the, hey, bro, yeah, so I got shot right here, yeah, and it went all the way through. You know, he's just showing off all the time. That's how they talk to each other about, it's just this cool fraternity that they're in, right? But nobody talks about the real issues. Even with the spouses, I knew a lot of spouses where, you know, we lived, but I never talked about the issues. But did I talk to on the trip with OHF? Yes, because I was able to bond with those girls in a different way. So
interesting. Yeah. Noe Aguirre, also a veteran who came out and had to deal with issues. And did you deal with these sort of issues?
Yes, I did 3 deployments, Iraq, Afghanistan, and I did a MU, which is a booze cruise for the Marine Corps.
Booze cruise?
Yeah.
Does that involve alcohol?
When you're at port. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Different day, different topic. But yeah, when I came back, I came back and I needed to establish myself as who I am in this community.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier. I'm fascinated by the idea that you go into the service, you're Noe Aguirre, everybody knows who you are. You went to this school, you went to that school, you did this, you did that, you go into the service. All of a sudden you come out and you like have to start from scratch. Right, like nobody knows who you are?
Yeah. Well, yes, well, I'm born and raised in California, so I was lucky to come back home and have family members that, you know, see you leave and come back and you're different. I think my problem is that I had a delayed onset for PTS, so I got out good.
What do you mean you had a delayed onset?
So I got out in December of 2012, and I did my terminal leave in 2013, and I went to start a school. Everything's fine. I'm doing great with school, college, learning. And you're trying to keep up with these young kids, millennials, kind of doing their thing, being so good at studying. Well, PTS starts messing with your cognitive abilities. It doesn't let you retain knowledge. You have to read the page multiple times. You have to be in a closed room, no noise, no wind, no smells. All these things you have to account for to get back into that mindset. And nobody understands what's going on until you end up at the VA arguing with a few people, yelling at some people, and finally you get some help and get pointed in the right direction. And I had to relearn myself. So essentially, what are my triggers? Who or what creates these triggers? What do I do if these triggers are around me?
What triggers you?
I think for me, because I live under, in Palisades, I live under a air highway, descending airplanes. Bad. Helicopters, you know, real low, flying, hitting corners.
What do you do?
Well, I think initially it was when a descending airplane, you're expecting to hear the airdrop of ordnance. And I just sat there and just waited. So if I was reading, I would stop, wait, and wait, and wait, and it just, okay, it's not going to come.
So then you go into a flashback.
Well, it's essentially, yeah, and there's different types. It could be smell, sight, sounds. Even just situations where somebody's putting you in a stressful environments. Professors, sometimes they overstep their boundaries with not understanding what we're going through, and they're right away start putting their political views in front of you or at you. And sometimes I've been in situations where I've had to step out of a classroom. Like, I'm sorry, I need to step out. And those are difficult to explain to professors that have never served or don't understand.
I think a lot of people don't understand PTSD that well. And I think it is, we've heard about it forever, but I'm not sure that people really know what happens to one person? I mean, what happens to you may be a little different than what happens to Orlando. And I think, you know, a conversation like this to better understand what that is a valuable thing. Christine, you were in the Air Force for 24 years. That's amazing to me because I thought you were only like 25.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome very much. So did you have these issues?
Fortunately and unfortunately, I never really deployed to any area of combat. It is definitely a different lifestyle. You know, I retired out of London and moved to LA, and I'm not from here, so it was like a new place, you know, a new house, you know, get the kids sorted and everything. But it was when I didn't have a job to go to or somebody to support me in the transition, you know, to connect back to the community is where I kind of struggled.
Is it harder for women to come out of service and try to reassimilate into the community?
It was very challenging because when I got here and I was trying to meet people and I was, you know, they were like, what brought you to LA? And I was like, oh, I retired. And they're like, from what? And I was like, well, the military. And then instantly they didn't know what to do with me. And I was like, I'm no different than I was 5 minutes ago. So I just ended up saying my job ended and I came here to finish school. So it kind of put me in a position that, like, I'm proud of my service. I loved being in. But I couldn't share that without feeling kind of awkward, so I changed that. And then I was fortunate when I got into the veteran space that somebody was very adamant every time I introduced myself is to mention that I was in the service, because we have to own this. You know, we have to claim our service, and we have to remind the community that women are serving, and we have been serving for a very long time.
You know, you're with an organization that's just starting in Southern California. Tell me about that.
I'm with U.S. Vets. We have a long history here, actually, in L.A., but I have this amazing program that I'm supporting called Women Vets on Point. So we're a starting point, which is often what veterans and especially women vets look for, to connect to services and resources in the community and then to each other and then ultimately to mental health whenever we need that in our journey.
Well, let's talk about mental health, because that's really an issue. I mean, Noe is nodding his head and this is something where services are critically important.
It is. It's most important. Women struggle to ask for help anyways, and then military
Why?
Women.
Why do they do that?
Women, I think, because we have the attitude, we can do this. You know, I can take it on. I can handle it. And then military women are trained, and we're like, you know, we've already lived through this experience, and sometimes we have trust issues, so we don't move forward and we don't ask for help.
But you know, this country is fairly—I don't want to say new, but newer than a lot of other countries in having women in our armed forces. I mean, women have been in for a long time. You obviously were in for 24 years, but countries like Israel require it. And so you have any knowledge of countries like Israel and how women are when they come out of the service and how that affects them?
I don't know particularly about Israel. I was reading something the other day about Canada is also addressing the issues about women in service. And also suicide prevention is also a big conversation that we need to continue to have because we need to reduce the stigma and make it okay to talk about it.
Are there more women than men involved in suicide of veterans?
Percentage-wise, based on, you know, obviously more men in service, but based on our percentage, yes, more women are committing. That's not the right way to say it.
Ending their lives.
Completing their lives, yes. Ending their lives from suicide.
Why do you think that's the case for women?
Unfortunately, in the veteran community, that's one of the options on our list of solutions, which is really disappointing. And I would love to, you know, help change that conversation. But, you know, we get stuck and we get in a hard place and you seem, you know, there's no one to reach out to.
Is there a sense of desperation?
Yes.
Yeah. And isolation?
Yes. And we very much think we're alone.
And so the organization that you're involved in will help women get out of that feeling of being in a bubble?
Oh, most definitely.
How do you do that?
You just connect with us on Women Vets on Point. We have a website that has our phone number and our location on it.
What do you do?
Well, we're there. We listen. We find out what they're looking for, if it's a housing support, employment support, or if they're asking for mental health. We talk about, you know, where do you live? What are you interested in? Do you want to see a private provider? Or you want to go back to the VA? Whatever it works for them. So we just take the to start the conversation.
So you connect people to services?
We do, services and mental health.
Okay, so Robert Storr is the executive director for U.S. Vets, and this is new in Southern California. What do you want to tell people about your organization?
Well, I think it's really important to know, U.S. Vets actually started in 1993. We're now the largest organization that's a nonprofit helping homeless veterans specifically. So we noticed the problem here in L.A., and then we began building residential facilities. The idea being, if we're talking about mental health, there was a whole generation of veterans coming out of the Vietnam War who didn't receive any support, and we're still lagging behind in being able to address those issues. I'm a clinician, so prior to this, I worked with the Suicide Prevention Center in Los Angeles as the director. So we started out looking at the homeless issue at that end of the spectrum, where you're already taking somebody that's really digressed or has difficulty managing. Now we're looking at the other end of it. How can we prevent that from happening? How can we assess our veterans and make sure we understand the needs and we know how to treat that now so we don't end up contributing? We're the largest population of homeless veterans in the country here in LA.
So it's very common to see homeless people on our streets in Southern California. And it's very common for us to see signs that say, I'm a homeless vet. And so are you going out into the communities? Are you reaching out to these people? Are you trying to get them off of the streets? And how difficult is that? Because in my dealings with people who are homeless on the streets, they tell me they really don't want to be helped. They really want to be left alone.
Sure. I think basically everybody intuitively wants to be helped, but it depends on your mental health state. And we'll go anywhere, under bridges, homeless encampments, and we will ask, are you a veteran specifically? We'd love to help everybody, but specifically veterans, we want to see if we can identify and make sure that they know their resources available. Some are ready, some aren't. Persistence, and kind of like Christine said, if you build a relationship, if you get to know somebody after a while, you're an outreach worker, and you get to know them and understand them. And we work with the Department of Mental Health at Patriotic Hall, and we also work with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. What we try to do is surround the veterans with resources and services. So if there is a mental health issue, they get the counseling and support, and then we can move them into transitional housing, stabilize them, help them find a job, to develop a career. And from there, then we try to get them into permanent housing and sustain that.
It sounds like a cottage industry of trying to put together things to help people that serve our country, and yet they need so much more when they come out of the service than when they went into it.
Yeah, the transition, you know, understanding our own human psyche, you know, as a psychotherapist, anytime we go through transition, it's tough. It disorients us. It creates added stress. But the transition from military to civilian life is specifically tough because we train our men and women to operate in a certain way. That's not the same way they operate. The rest of us operate most of the time, but they have to operate that way. They have to adopt a certain set of characteristics. They have to cut off their feelings to a certain extent. They have to be able to be on attention and handle a lot of stress. So you walk out of the fire, and all of a sudden there's no fire, and you're surrounded by a totally different circumstances.
But in this room, just in this room around this table alone, you connect with local agencies to get funding from state or federal, but then you've got Operation Healing Forces, where they'll take people like Orlando and Molly and put them out on a boat and have a nice experience out in an environment that's a little more romantic like. Okay, you're shaking it. Molly was a romantic. Was it romantic? Come on, Molly.
Well, there were six other couples there, so.
All right. Well, okay. There are limitations, but I mean, so yeah. It's a lot different than what you do.
Well, we collaborate. What they're doing recreational therapy is extremely valuable, especially as a group. So we collaborate to the best of our ability with all the community partners here in LA. Some people provide housing, some food, some employment. We do our best with employment, really providing training and housing support. And recently, then we understood that the rate of suicide was climbing in women veterans.
How are you dealing with that?
The fortunate thing about this organization, it's innovative. It says, can we find private grant funding to address the problem? Where are the women veterans? How can we engage them? Christine said there's a couple of very important issues. They're not seeking help, so we got to go out and find them. So we developed a virtual website. And then once we find them, the engagement piece, as a therapist, I don't want to go to a therapist. You know, nobody wants to go and talk about their problems or issues. So you have to make sure that you understand them and you understand that point, and you start to understand the mental health issues that are associated with that. And if they know you hear them and they know you understand them, then you'll begin to build some trust, and that'll open the door at least.
You work with the VA system, and is your feeling that there is a lot that needs to be done to the system itself, to the infrastructure?
Yeah, I think we look at that all the time, and we've heard about the failings. And sometimes I think we become over-dependent on the government to provide everything. And that's where nonprofits like ourselves, I mean, I think they're making amazing strides. They've really started their own crisis line, and they've really developed the ability to outreach and address it. And we need more. You know, we're always going to need more. There are more military men and women coming out now that have been deployed more often, which creates more stress and more issues. So nonprofits like us, we work with the county, you know, the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, and we work with the Department of Mental Health. We try to surround whatever's missing, whatever the VA can't pick up. And mental health is one of the things that we're still struggling with.
One of the things I want to ask you before we move on to Stephanie is children. I mean, we've talked about husbands and wives, but we haven't really talked about children. And how are children caught up in this?
Well, you know, and thanks for bringing it up. I mean, it is a family system. And once you disrupt the family system and take the leadership of that, which is the husband and the wife, usually the husband, but sometimes the wife away, the children are going to suffer. They're going to suffer from the sense of loss or the sense of connection. And they're going to take their cues from mom and dad to see how well they're doing. And if mom and dad are struggling, the children are going to pick up the stress automatically. And that's where the issues begin. So family therapy has to be available. You have to be able to take care of the spouse and the family. Absolutely.
Stephanie Stone, who I finally referred to as Sharon Stone.
That's me.
That's you. Yes, Sharon's an actress. Stephanie is a hard worker for the L.A. County Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, and you've got about 400,000 veterans that you have to help.
That's right.
It sounds like a big, tall order.
It is, and we do it every day. We have people out in the field throughout the county of Los Angeles that try to find the veterans wherever they're at. We have standing locations as well as we go out into the community for what we call homeless stand-downs to meet with the veterans and provide services, partnering with the agencies that Robert just talked about. And another group that I wanted to mention was the USCCIR, or it's the Veterans Collaborative. That happens here in Los Angeles, where we have 400 different organizations that come together, organizations and agencies like my own that come together to help veterans. Those are our collaboratives. Partners like the USS Iowa, US Vets, New Directions, UCLA, and USC, they all have to be at the table in order for us to make a difference.
We have a new veterans secretary in Washington, Robert Wilkie. Do you think, did I say that right, Robert Wilkie?
You did.
Yeah. I'm not going to get too political with you here. I'm just sort of wondering, when county agencies look up at the federal agency, what they do is critically important to what you do.
Absolutely. It's a true partnership because we work closely not only with our federal partners, but also with our state partners. The California Veteran Affairs, Office of California Veteran Affairs, we call them CalVet. So CalVet and the counties work hand in hand to connect the veterans through the claims and appeals process, aid and attendance and pension and more. But that all those documents, all of that process ultimately connects us to the VA system, the federal VA system.
So let's talk about the USS Iowa, because I happen to be a fan of that great big boat. I have been on it a few times, and, you know, I think it's important, Jonathan Williams, who's the CEO of the Battleship, to sort of tell us, what do you do for local veterans?
Well, you know, we're a museum, of course, but I think the more important part is, since we opened, the number of vets that come to the ship, they just naturally migrate there. Become part of our crew family and volunteer and do different activities aboard the ship, and they just connect with each other. And, you know, not knowing that or realizing that till 6 or 9 months ago, that it's really organic. And I got to mention, you know, I'm not a professional in this world. I'm not a therapist or anything, but I do know that on almost a daily basis, I'll have somebody that's a vet sit on my couch in my office and start talking to me. And this is very common aboard ship, and they talk to each other, and it's a 7-day-a-week activity aboard there. And so what we're looking at doing and what we're working on right now is becoming those almost a permanent fixture where they can build relationships with advocates and coordinators that can help provide them direction to where they may want to go or who they may want to talk to. This social positive relationship that I think they're not coming to us to reach out for help. They're coming to us because they want to be connected. They want to be part of a family, something that was really in the military. They were part of a family, part of a community that they understood. And they rebuild that community. They rebuild that family aboard ship, and that really opens them up to start talking about some of the issues they have and opening that door to where they should go or what they should do.
Well, one of the things that struck me, and why we're even together for this podcast, is that I was on the ship just a few weeks ago, and there was a gentleman on the deck, and we just got to talking, and he was talking about suffering from the effects of Agent Orange. And it just sort of rolled around in my head that, you know, these are real life threatening issues, and people every single day, I mean, I just happened to strike up a conversation with this guy. It wasn't like he was some official person I needed to talk to or anything. And there are just so many like him that are looking for help.
Yeah, you know, this is, once again, I don't know what it is unique about the ship for those of the have been there. That is a common occurrence for us. You know, the Iowa had its own incident in 1989 where 47 sailors lost their lives. And 1,900 plus sailors have been dealing with PTSD since that point. And it happens several times a year where somebody will come back to the ship and they'll be at the bottom of the gangway, tears rolling down their face. And we know exactly what's going on. We spring into action and welcome them back aboard. And by the time the day is over, it's interesting. They said, you know, that one day is all I think about. And when I leave the ship, I realize it was one bad day and a lot of good days. And
I'd be remiss, though, if I didn't ask you to explain that one bad day. What happened?
April 19th of 1989, there was an open breach explosion aboard the battleship Iowa in Turret 2 that killed 47 sailors. There was many different investigations out of it, and I'm not going to get into them because there's many different reasons that they conclusions they came to. But they almost lost the ship. The magazine flat started to ignite, and we almost had an Arizona disaster related to that. And so we live with that on a daily basis. Some of our crew members today were there that day. But we do have a very diverse group of folks that connect to the ship. I think it's important to know, you know, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, even sometimes 24 hours a day, that there's somebody there on that ship. We're alive on that ship. And so when somebody needs somewhere to connect on a Sunday morning at 10 a.m. and they just want to drink some coffee with some pals, they could hop in a car and drive down to the ship and drink coffee with pals. So I think that's the big piece of it, from just a feeling valued and feeling like you have a place to be.
So that's a way that you connect with veterans, but what kind of services do you offer veterans?
You know, primarily, and that's an interesting question because we're formalizing it now. What we've ended up doing is 90% of our crew are volunteers, and they've ended up volunteering in different departments, from operations like welding and skill training all the way into business administration and marketing. And we let them participate in those departments, and many of them have ended up getting job skills in those areas and getting jobs outside of there. We always hate losing them, of course, but then we find that they've learned a skill on board the ship, and they've built the self-esteem they need to be able to get those jobs. So now we're starting to formalize that more into a program where we can do that, but also be a like a center point, a hub and spoke approach, where they come in and they talk about some of those issues, and somebody that could say, hey, would you like me to help advocate or point you to the right places to get the support you need and bring you down that road, and have that relationship with that person that is not a person that floats in and out, you know, twice a week or something. They're there 5 or 7 days a week. There's somebody there that they know and build that relationship over several years.
That hub and spoke approach is very common in organizations like this that are trying to reach out to help people in different ways. I want to swing back around the table a last time, and starting with Jonathan, go ahead and tell us what it is that, you know, you'd like to sort of say as a bottom line, but, you know, let people know how they can reach the Iowa and if there's anything people can do for you.
So the biggest thing for me is, and like I said, once again, I'm not a professional. I'm not a therapist. I'm not going to claim to be. You know, I'm not.
You're not a news reporter either.
No, I'm not a news reporter. You know, I'm
a podcast host.
No, podcast. You know, I'm just a crazy guy that's kind of taken all of this on and learned.
But he's a good guy. I know him. I've known him for.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. I try to be once in a while. Yeah. And then, but you know, I think the biggest thing I've come to learn. I've spent 18 years working on the ship. I'm not a veteran, but I, you know, it was interesting. I went to a Legion meeting just about 3 weeks ago, and you know, I was first time I ever went, and I thought, how is this going to go? And it was weird because it was one of the few places I felt like I fit in, and that tells you a lot about what I'm surrounded by on a daily basis. But you know, with Fleet Week and the Navy and the Marine Corps and all those people I deal with, so I think it's important for folks to know, or veterans to know, and even the non-veterans, the civilians, imagine yourself being in your community for 15, 20 years, surrounded by what you know, what you understand, a very comfortable place, and being pulled out of that community and put into a community that you don't understand. And you have to restart, and you have to rebuild that and re-enter that and start to build new relationships and start to build, you know, new grocery stores and, you know, new ways of doing things. And how is it going to work? And it's almost a different society. So I think it's important that veterans understand that they have brothers and sisters that are going through exactly the same thing that they're going through. They just need to talk to them. And there's plenty of places to get involved in. There's plenty of things to get involved in the community. I always tell vets that are retiring that, you know, I'll just socially be talking to them. It happened a couple times in the past month, and they said, we're really worried about what's going to happen next. And I said, find something you care about. Get involved immediately. Do it as often as you can. Be connected. You will learn quickly, and you will feel that you have something to provide to the community. I think that's the biggest important part of it. And so people need to realize, vets need to realize that they're not alone. Get involved in something, start reaching out. And then civilians also need to realize that this is a community, and their vets are just like them. They've gone through, you know, hard times sometimes, you know, they've gone through good times, but to embrace the fact that they are different. I think that's big in our society, is we're all different, and to embrace that fact and know that it's our job to accept them, because we didn't serve. I didn't serve. And I'll tell you, I owe it to every veteran in this country that served for the freedoms that I have and for the freedoms my kids have. That's why I do what I do every single day of my life, and I will till the day I die.
You know, I mentioned that Stephanie Stone is chief deputy of the LA County Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, but she's also a veteran. Spending how many years where?
I did 20 years, so I did multiple locations, largely in the United States.
Well, thank you for your service.
And, thank you, sir.
And what do you want to tell people as sort of a final thought?
Well, I want to thank Jonathan for his comments. I think that, first of all, as a veteran who transitioned out here in Los Angeles, it was going to events at Patriotic Hall, where our headquarters is located, that got me engaged in the veteran community and ultimately found my home. I would remind the veterans as well to stay engaged or become engaged. Start with your benefits. Come to Bob Hope Patriotic Hall in downtown Los Angeles or wherever your county veteran service office is. Get connected to other services. We have at Patriotic Hall, we're a one-stop resource center, so we have U.S. vets there providing all sorts of services, which I'll let Robert talk of. We have American Job Corps Center for jobs, and we have legal services through LA County Bar Association and so much more. I think that oftentimes as veterans, again, we tend to isolate, and we make some assumptions about what the world how they see us and what assumptions they may have of us, and we don't stop to challenge our own assumptions.
I think a lot of that was very evident during the Vietnam era.
Yeah, well, I think that a lot of that, our assumptions were built off of that generation, and so I want to thank the Vietnam vets, too, because it was their generation and is their generation that's really has provided a lot of the services, not only the history that we look back on, but have developed these services now. U.S. Vets, as an example, is run by a Vietnam veteran. There's all sorts of programs out there that I can point to that are run by or created by Vietnam veterans that have really provided some services that weren't in existence then, but that are lifting up the services for.
And what do people do to reach your county offices?
You can look us up online. We're at mva.lacounty.gov. GOV. You could just come out to Bob Hope Patriotic Hall.
And Robert, why don't you kind of double down on that?
Sure, yeah, I'll jump in there. I mean, it really is a privilege to be able to work together and to find the solution. And I think, you know, Stephanie's message is right. There's help and there's hope. And for those people that got separated from that, we want to put them back together and we want to build that community and make sure they know that we've got the resources to help them out, whether it be looking for a job, some housing assistance, mental health, employment, career planning. So down at Bob Hope Patriotic Hall, we'll put that one more time, downtown in L.A., real near the Staples Center off of Figueroa. Make sure people know that, you know, we're here for you.
Christine Stanley, why don't you, you guys work together, you and Robert?
Oh, we do, and we get to support Stephanie down in the county department every day. So I just would love for all the veterans out there to if you think there isn't something out there, keep looking and keep asking the questions and keep going. I have to share, I've learned more. I didn't even know about the Iowa Today, and I think I'm in the know. So there's you learn something new every day, all day. So keep asking the questions and keep moving forward.
And now you're more in the know.
I
and
am.
Knowy. I'm sorry, man. I had to do it. I just had to do it.
It's perfect. I guess for my message is don't let it seem so hopeless. There actually are people right now doing research and studying. There's examples like telemedicine. I know UCLA Wellness Center on the VA campus is doing it. That kind of removes the next factor of depression where you don't want to leave your house or your safe space. Also, there's the Brain Treatment Center out of Newport, and there's also the PRTMS out of San Diego. And all those are, they use Tesla magnets to harmonize your neurons in your brain. And those are all cutting edge. They're becoming FDA approved. He probably knows something about it from San Diego. It's really great.
Did you go through some of that?
No. I haven't done that, but I did want to talk about the PrEP program over in Tampa.
Yeah.
Where I was at.
Did you wrap up what you wanted to say, Noah?
Just go a few more.
Yeah.
I think the collaboration is the word. Is we have the American Legion, who doesn't work with the DAV, who doesn't work with the VFW, who doesn't work with the VA, everyone's siloed, and nobody's really collaborating and working together. It's almost a shame that it's a generational divide, especially it's more polarized in my Legion, for example, where I'm at in Palisades, post 23. We have the World War II guys who don't get along with the Vietnam guys, who don't like the Korea War vet guys, who don't like any of the Gulf War.
Why is that?
I don't understand. It's not because it's the grumpy old man theory. Everybody always wants to say it's the grumpy old man theory, you know, or the grumpy old veteran theory. It's more of there's a reason for it, and a lot of the older generations want respect automatically. I need this. I did that. The best generation. The best, whatever.
The greatest generation.
The greatest generation. And essentially, now they're not that. They're grumpy old guys who are upset at us.
So the greatest generation is now the grumpy old generation.
You know, I don't quote me on that. Please.
I think you just said it. I don't have to quote you.
Well, I'll take that. Well, it's essentially, we're having a problem getting some cohesion there, and it's generational gaps that because especially the American Legion, because it's only you can only join if you were during a combat era. So Grenada.
But here's a silly question. I get what you're talking about. There are niches, and this group is kind of this little niche and this group, but in the thinking of Rodney King, can't we all get along? Is it not possible for everybody to get along?
I do have a dream that one day the younger vets are providing services for the older vets, and we are doing some outreach, veteran coordinating, interstate, whether it's inner county. It's going to happen. The USSI was leading the way. They're doing a lot of great things with Fleet Week. They're doing. They're trying to get us on board for air shows and having the outreach vehicles and teams that are essentially veterans being paid to serve other vets who maybe don't leave their house anymore. They're just, you know, they're geriatric or whatnot. You know, sometimes PTS is different for everybody.
And PTS doesn't just easily go away.
It does. Yeah, exactly. Unless you do a PRTMS in San Diego, then it might.
Yeah, tell me, Orlando, about about San Diego and the prep program?
Well, the treatment that I went to wasn't in San Diego. It was out of Tampa.
Okay.
And this is like before I got out, and I got very, very lucky to go to this program where they, you know, I had to go through a CPT kind of therapy where I had to write and write and write and write.
CPT.
It's, I don't know.
Cognitive behavioral therapy.
Cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yep, train your thinking.
Good thing we have a psychologist in the room.
Train your thinking to affect your behavior.
Yeah.
Right.
So I had to go through that, you know, and it's a team of a psychiatrist, psychologist, you know, the head doctor, et cetera, you know, and you also have a physical therapist there. And what they do is they try to get you as close as possible to when you came in. So they treat cognitive. So when I went to this place, you know, I was so hyper aware that my test scores in the beginning of the program, they were in the toilet, per se. I came out 11 weeks later. Not only did I went above an average, you know, of doing all these things. It helped with my cognitive, you know, of course, functional fitness, my vision. I didn't know that I had, like, rips from all the blasts and all that stuff.
You have hearing issues as well.
Yeah, I have hearing issues, the tinnitus and everything. And this was all done through James A. Haley, the VA hospital, and it was an inpatient program that I went through, and honestly, like, you know, Molly came to Florida also through the Care Coalition. You know, I've been involved with all these great OHF, Care Coalition, you know, and
OHF being Operation Healing Forces.
Yes.
Right.
And she came back, and like, people were cutting me off and everything, and she just looked at me and she's like, where is my husband? And what did you do with him? But the first question that she asked the doctor immediately, and this is like, I think Dr. Thor or Dr. Goodham or one of them, she's like, is this going to be permanent? Because if it's not permanent, then what's going on? Because I don't want it. But going back to Dr. Jekyll,
I have
Mr.
a
Hyde,
feeling Molly is not somebody you mess with.
No, you know, it's quite funny because the other day I tripped over the dog barrier, and it was like, it was late, you know, it was like 11:30, but I completely tripped, and I just like raged, so I grabbed the thing and I threw it down, you know, to the second floor, and then I just sit there and look at myself, and I'm like laughing, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? I got mad because it's dark, and it's my fault. I know that thing is there. She wakes up, she's like, because she hears me fall, and she's like, oh my God, is it like an earthquake or something? You know, what's going on? And then she just hears me, and then she starts laughing. And we're like both laughing, you know? So it's like, yes, I got upset, you know, and everything, but they taught me all the techniques to bring myself down. Yeah, it's okay to get upset. It's okay to go back and reminisce and think about all those things that happened in the past that could be good or bad, but it's to come forward, you know, and overcome those things.
It's a lot. There's a lot there to deal with, and there's a lot of ways to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
One way is the kinds of things that Operation Healing Force has done with sort of these little trips and things like that, but it's deeper than that. Hey, right?
You got, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Molly.
Go ahead. I just wanted to thank Jeff Hudson and Mr. Markell for making all of this stuff happen. And people like them and all these people that donated their yachts, their homes, their retirement stuff, you know, that...
Do you think without that you'd be in a very different place at the moment?
It certainly helps. You know, it certainly helps. But I think even... Because there's, like, places that, you know, they have places here in Los Angeles. And they do the same... It's the same thing. You know, we were just fortunate enough to... go to the Virgin Islands.
So as I'm sure, as
you know,
I'm sure
somebody's got to take
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
right?
somebody's got to do the
it.
Dirty work. And so I'm sure, as it might be in your house, Molly gets the last word.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Molly, what do you think? What do you want?
Well,
to
I
tell
just kind of wanted to, you know, the question that I asked was, so is this permanent? Is he always going to have to go to therapy, or you know, those kinds of questions? And everybody in this room has mentioned seek help. Come see us here, come see us here. And I think, so we're just now starting the retirement transition, and it's going to be important for us to continue. I mean, we've gotten help. We've gotten lucky that we've gotten help while he's still in. But seek that help while you're still in. And the change for him, you know, he's always going to have PTSD. He's always going to have ADHD and TBI and all that stuff. So I was nodding when he was talking about the brain and thing in San Diego because he needs that. You know, but we're always going to have to do, he may always have to go to some form of therapy. We may, as a couple, need to always go to some form of therapy. So that's something that is going to be part of our transition as well. And it's really important that you're open to it. And I think that's how we've been able to stick together.
You know, it's difficult because, you know, people like Orlando and Noe and everybody else around here, they volunteer for the service or they get drafted into the service. They serve our country. In some cases, people make the ultimate sacrifice. You come back, hopefully alive, you come back, and then all of a sudden you're looking at an entire minefield of mental issues, mm-hmm. and reassimilation issues and all kinds of things that I'm not sure when you went into the service anybody told you you might have to deal with.
That is correct. Nobody gives you that disclosure of, hey, by the way, you might never be the same person ever again. You might have phobias that are irrelevant to most civilians, but to you, they may be the most scariest thing in the world. And also, I don't want to push forward. I had a discussion today with one of my Army guys. He doesn't really like the exposure that the two-a-day suicide thing's going on. The veterans committed suicide at an alarming rate. Yes, but I think the actual stats are changing. They're dynamic. The VA catches up. The organizations are filling those gaps. And we're still stuck on the 22 a day. But in reality, it's more dynamic than that, and it's changing. It's very aqueous.
Changing for the better?
Yeah, well, it's always going for the better, but you got to have growing pains. I think since the war started and kicked off in 9/11, it's been playing catch up. And it's I've talked to the generations of vets that started the invasion, went through the post-invasion, the turnover, the retake over through ISIS. I think those are all different stages of the war that aren't really being looked at.
You know, I said Molly was going to get the last word. Molly, come on. Give us one more last word.
Gosh.
Just say something. There's hope and help.
There is hope and help. There you go. Take advantage of it. It's important. I mean, if you want to stay together, you got to take advantage of everything that's offered to you. We were really just lucky that we got to go on to a yacht trip.
But you guys have a pretty good bond.
We do.
I mean, I haven't known you for very long, just a few hours, but I mean, it feels to me like there's a real good connection there, and I'm not trying to be Dr. Phil. I'll be Dr. Hal, but it does seem like you guys really support each other very well.
He takes care of me, and I take care of him.
Yeah,
I think...
No, go ahead. Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah. It's all right. No rage. Go ahead.
No, it's communicating, you know. I never yelled at Molly. I yelled, but I never yelled at her. I was frustrated. I wasn't frustrated at her, but she was the tool that was there that I can just
express. She was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
You know, yeah, I could just express all my anger, and she was like, one day what the antenna guy came over, what's his name?
The cable guy.
Oh, satellite television?
Yeah. And I came from work, and I was racing, you know, to get to the house. And I'm yelling at this guy. And you could just imagine all the profanities in the world. But it wasn't directed at this guy. And poor guy was just doing his job. It's just that I was at work, and I had to come. And I think it was over a TV. She was asking me a question of where was it? And I couldn't explain.
So somehow you exploded. He got in the way.
And he got in the
way.
And what did I say when he left?
Oh, yeah. She said, you need to go get help. and I looked at her, and I was...
He did.
And I was huffing and puffing. And, I mean, I did call the hotline that the Army has. And I went, and I talked to a counselor, and... You know, we thought that everything was fine then, and then I had to go talk to another counselor. But, I mean, it's you have to try because, I mean, not every counselor is going to have the right answer for you. Fortunately for me, it was Dr. Thor's.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that lady, you know.
But it gets down to if you don't try, you don't get. So nothing ventured, nothing gained. Mm-hmm. And again, Molly gets the last word.
Go get help.
All right, everybody, one time. Ready? What the how?
What the how?
There you go. All right. Help and hope, probably two of the most significant words to come out of that conversation. Well, I want to thank everybody for being with us. And I want to thank you for following along and also subscribing to What the Hell. If you haven't yet, you can subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, or any of the places where you get podcasts. And until next time, take care.